Blog Talk Radio.
Art Bell has gone to bed. Rush Limbaugh won't be awake for hours. You have arrived at the Commute Faster Energy Hour. Energy. There comes a time when all good men come to realize that that disturbing hacking cough is not caused from years of smoking because they never smoked a day in their life. No, we can thank big oil, coal, and nuclear waste for polluting the air we breathe and the water we drink. But now, bringing solutions to the monopoly-caused energy crisis. And coming to you from his remote location in exile, deep in a salt mine just outside Death Valley, kind of living out my own near-death experience, I'm your energy expert and host, Ken Rasmussen, occasionally called Late Night Leroy. Greetings, clean energy fans. This is Ken Rasmussen, the host of the Commute Faster Energy Hour. And today is Monday, February 19, 2007. We're starting the show at 1 p.m. Pacific time, which is at the moment our regular schedule. And I want to thank anyone returning for returning because we sure had a lot of technical blunders on our first show. And it helps that when I bring on a guest that I don't kill my own mic. So we're progressively learning this control panel here to get the show going. One top news item of the day, a company by the name of Spectrex has developed a sensor to illustrate where a hydrogen flame is at. Anyone who has worked with hydrogen in a flame aspect knows that it's essentially a visible flame. There is little or no light emitted from that flame, which can make it pretty dangerous to work with. So if you check the top news story under the technological advances column and at commutefaster.com at the energy link, you can get the full details on that product. Now, I'm doing this special show today because two earth-shaking news events were announced this last week. Late Thursday night was one, and the other happened on another talk show on Saturday afternoon. So what I'm going to be doing is bringing on the two closest parties I can find to these events to discuss them. The first event that happened Thursday night was the well-known inventor Dennis Lee and his group have come up with a modification that that has actually several aspects to it, but the most startling is that it totally eliminates any pollution from small engines. Now, if you're knowledgeable on the pollution problem around the world, you know we've got over 800 million internal combustion engines putting away all around the planet, and 75% of the pollution generated by all 800 million of those engines, 75% of the pollution comes from small engines. Now, if you talk to anybody who has visited Asian countries, Vietnam, China, whatever, there's hardly any cars on the road. It's all mopeds and motor scooters. It's all those small engines that are really belching out the two-stroke engine exhaust into the air. So that is a serious problem. Well, the company Dennis Lee is affiliated with, United Community Services of America and Better World Technologies, has come up with a new unit that knocks out all that pollution even from a small engine. So we will be talking very shortly here with Kurt Anaheim from BeFree Technologies on that. From BeFreeTech.com, excuse me. And by the way, the links to the websites of anyone I interview will be posted on these show notes within a couple hours after the show. The other announcement that hit Saturday was over on Sterling Allen's show for Free Energy Now, where he was interviewing Mike Brady, who started the company Perendev Motors. Now, Mike Brady has been playing around with a permanent magnet motor for some time. And if you've been following permanent magnet motor technologies, there's plenty of skepticism out there. Well, Mike made an announcement that he not only has a working model, because we've seen bits and pieces of working models now for some time. He's now got quite a number of units installed and tested out in the field. So that is shocking news. So we will be bringing on about the 35-minute point of the show. We'll be bringing on Sterling Allen, who did the interview, and we'll get some straight answers from him on that. So we're going to open up here with getting into this pollution elimination device, which is a modification on something else that Dennis had just come out with, called the pre-ignition catalytic converter. So let me first introduce my first guest. This is Kurt Anaheim from BeFreeTech.com. And he is a licensed dealer for UCSA products, which are the exclusive handlers of Better World Technology products. And so I wanted to get one of their own dealers on the air here today and tell us what we can about the new product. So first off, welcome, Kurt. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ken. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Okay. I guess the first thing we need to bring listeners up to speed with is just a very brief synopsis of just what is this pre-ignition catalytic converter.
Mm-hmm. Well, it produces a plasma and operates to replace the catalytic converter that exists on a car. And, of course, the reason for that, first we have to understand that there's a law that prevents you from installing anything that interferes with the catalytic converter. So we've replaced the sacred catalytic converter with another one that does better than the original. And the effect of passing the fuel through this device with a piece of cold rolled steel that becomes magnetic, and the effect in this chamber, this resonant chamber, magnetic resonant chamber, is a plasma. And the plasma converts the fuel to a plasma. I mean, it's a lightning storm-like effect taking place inside this chamber. And the fuel, when passed through it, ultimately converts to its elements. All of the elements are are passed through then to the engine, and they burn, apparently, 100%, or at least as close to 100% as I guess we can get.
When the term plasma is used to a lot of the members of my listening audience, bells and alarms go off in their head. Talking to some people who have worked with it on laboratory experimentation is that, plasma does amazing things, but it also, depending on what technique you're using, plasma can devour an enormous amount of energy itself. So what I'd like you to clarify is that this PICC, pre-ignition catalytic converter, actually utilizes the existing heat from the engine to ignite the plasma.
Or at least that's as I understand it, yes, the plasma effect. But it's, I believe, more magnetic than it is heat-driven.
True. Well, plasma, by definition, has some electromagnetic properties. And
well, one of the things that was mentioned on one of the conference calls is Dennis said the wrench flew off the table and hit the pre-ignition catalytic converter itself, came, was magnetically attracted to it and drawn right off the table and flew over to it under a certain circumstance. that the pre-ignition catalytic converter was operating in, at which point it was actually producing four times mileage, the equivalent of what would be four times mileage under the equivalent load conditions measured on the dynamometer. So there's an example of the magnetic effect that's rather dramatic, and that was
okay. So again, trying to clarify this, since most of us are just trying to get up to speed on it, and I'm not totally up to speed even myself on it, even though I've been trying to follow as best I can. So what this unit is now is a single box unit that is the same size and shape as a person's existing catalytic converter.
Right.
On their existing park in the driveway family sedan, and all it needs to do is simply remove the old catalytic converter and slap this new catalytic converter in.
Right.
Now, I think I've heard you or Dennis comment that there is some kind of a modification to the engine's timing that has to be done to a car's computer. Is that true then?
We're going to replace the computer, actually, using a whole different computer that's going to handle the timing and pulse width of the fuel as it flows through this system, since that's key to compensating for the fuel which has been deliberately changed on a regular basis, summer and winter, to prevent typical vaporization-type technologies from operating. Since there are so many varieties of fuel, there's going to be a compensation through the computer that's going to accommodate the various fuels as they hit the pre-ignition catalytic converter. Will adjust to produce plasma again, even though the fuel would otherwise normally have prevented it.
Okay, and then final clarification on this, and then we'll get on to what's actually available. Listeners may be familiar with other plasma attempts that have been done in the past. I mean, going way back, shocks to the 30s and whatnot. One of the main points that differentiates Dennis's system here, the PICC, from prior attempts is the reliability of it.
Yes.
I have worked with experimenters on other types, and yeah, this plasma always has done amazing things with combination not only hydrocarbon but actually being able to utilize a water blend in it. So that has been well known thus far, but there's also been an unreliability issue that it would run for X period of time and then just abruptly shut down. And that I'm sorry to say that's one of the scars that has prevented other attempts to get something like this going. But what does differentiate this is the computer modification that realizes when like thermal issues are starting to move around, and then it accommodates accordingly on it. So Dennis has got the PIC developed, and he was all ready to release it now for sale, and then
something
you fill in the story. What did he find?
They apparently discovered in the process of experimenting with it that they could close the loop. They could bring the output from the exhaust back to the intake.
I don't know if I want to go there because we know we can't destroy matter, but let me say what I do agree with. We already know that conventional devices have rerouted some of the exhaust back into your air intake. I mean, you just open, if anybody doubts me, open the hood on your car and look where some of those rubber hoses come. Some are coming right off the exhaust manifold, going right back into your fuel injector. That's been known for some time. The question is, how much of the exhaust can you route back through? Now, by using this plasma unit in between, they've accomplished something amazing here. They're now getting an outrageous amount of efficiency out of the fuel that goes in.
Right.
And so that is what impresses me most is the outrageously efficient use of the hydrocarbon fuel that's going in already.
Yeah, that's precisely right. You've just about explained it all, but with it running in a closed loop, we're talking about efficiencies that could be better than four times mileage, even with just running gasoline. But we're talking about four times right now, three or four times. mileage with gasoline. And then, of course, if you put 50% water with it, we should be able to get up to 6 or 8 times mileage. So a rather dramatic improvement in performance and eliminating pollution at the same time. So pretty exciting possibilities.
Yeah. Now, the next issue I want to handle that I know skeptics are mulling through in their minds, and we've got to clarify this, is proof, is this true, or are Kurt and I just developing our own sci-fi program here? As from what I understand it, Dennis's team. I hate using the term Dennis. Dennis is not the sole inventor here, people. Dennis has compiled many inventors with a lot of clever ideas, and he's simply the president of the company that has organized all these different inventors. I get kind of offended myself when people accuse Dennis of taking the credit for other people's ideas. No, listen to exactly what that gentleman says. And he does credit various inventors, but quite a few inventors insist on remaining anonymous.
Actually, Dennis doesn't even consider himself to be an inventor. He calls himself a promoter, and you'll say that. You'll discover if you know.
Precisely.
If you do his conference calls frequently, you'll discover that's true. And further than that, he always wants his team credited. He doesn't even care about credit at all himself and prefers not to even. He just considers himself strictly a promoter and is bringing all these technologies out. In occasion, he has to have his name on the technology because the inventor's too afraid to do that.
Yeah.
And that is the case in many cases. So he appears to be an inventor, but he never claims to be.
Okay. So getting now back to the PICC, pre-ignition catalytic converter, it was tested and proven, and he's already gung-ho to go out and release it for the family sedan, and then we now discover that, lo and behold, it works fantastic on small engines, especially with this rerouted exhaust. And now, and as I said right at the opener, and Kurt, feel free to embellish on this, is it's been tested on two-stroke engines, which anybody knows is the most polluting engine imaginable.
Yeah, in fact, they apparently are driving little mopeds, little motor scooters around with that technology. The technology won't be released until after the Chinese get a chance to bid on it, essentially, see if we can sell it to the Chinese first, because if we don't, they'll just copy it.
I want to get into that right after this one initial question here, and that's finally on confirmation that this exists. Now, I do understand that that some representative of the government has already come up and seen, I think Dennis said that on the last conference call, that it was a Chinese-manufactured motor scooter was what he had tested, and that after the modification, it still retained the full amount of horsepower and energy that it had to start with. Now, that's true, okay, and that he has now demonstrated this for some representative from the U.S. government. Now, do you know if that was from the Department of Energy or some spook agency or what?
Let's see. I can't remember what his title was. It doesn't come to me at the moment. But anyway, he was related. He was second in charge of that organization that was right under the president. So,
okay. Well,
the details I don't remember.
Yeah, now I shudder in my boots if you mention Bush administration, but nevertheless, government's in government. Government is government. We got to put up with whoever, whatever's there at the moment.
Sure. There's not much hope of getting anywhere with that. So
yeah,
it's useful that they were impressed, and it's useful that they came and they saw it, but it was mostly for the purposes of giving him an instruction as to where we really are and how far we're coming.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now this other major issue, and again, this we've got to answer the skeptics on the show, because to an extent I'm a skeptic on things. I mean, we can hear, look, we've all been watching Star Trek for 20 years. There's been amazing stuff on there, but how many replicators can you buy? How many teletransporters or whatever can you buy? We've got to differentiate that, and that's the whole purpose of my show, is saying that, well, some amazing stuff that we used to see in sci-fi 20 or 30 years ago is actually available now. We may even get into anti-gravity in some future shows. But this is a serious issue that is keeping it off the streets of the United States of America at the moment. Is anyone with a new product, and businessmen in the audience will feel right at home with what I'm about to say here. When you come out with anything here in the U.S., it's just a matter of a few months and the thing is showing up on the streets of China. The Asian countries, and it's not just China. I mean, you got Vietnam, you got, well, Indonesia, you got numerous Asian countries over there. For whatever reason, I don't know if it's a cultural thing or what, they pay absolutely no respect whatsoever to U.S. copyright or patent laws. So when you try to protect a clever invention, you really have to jump through a lot of hoops to get it protected. So I'll pass it back to you, Kurt, now. What has Dennis decided to do to deal with that issue and in hopes of maybe within 6 months to a year now get this invention available for motorcycles and motor scooters and lawnmowers and weed whackers here in the U.S.?
Right. Well, it's first. Objective is to have a conversation with, I guess, governmental authority and figures in the Chinese government, and he plans to retain a law firm and make a deal to try and sell the technology to China in advance of them copying it. So rather than just let them have it by setting up distribution here, and then they would copy the heck out of it immediately, rather we shall attempt to sell it to them first and then move forward with the technology in other countries, including ours, hopefully. So that's
okay. So since, and maybe we should point out that that is the re-looped exhaust, super efficient version of the PICC now.
We are talking running a PICC in a closed loop, although it's not called a PICC. It's a different product. It doesn't quite operate the same way. There's much more sophistication to the PICC and with the computer handling it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is more apparently a much simpler design. It'd be so easy to copy that it would be ridiculous to just release it.
But do I understand correctly that it does include the PICC as part of its system, though?
Yeah, the technology is the same. It still produces plasma. It's very similar to the technology, I believe, that Dennis was demonstrating nationwide when he did his technology tour show.
In
2006. So it's the small motor variety of that technology, which does apparently operate somewhat differently, and in a simpler manner. It still works exactly the same concept, and it still produces plasma. It still the plasma is fed back to the engine. But in addition to that, we are running it in a closed loop, so there's no exhaust, or at least no apparent exhaust.
Okay, so since, again, the main theme of my show is trying to find out, well, what can we do now. The intermediate item that I see is now being offered is a thing called a hydrogen fuel assist cell, right?
Yes, and there is a reason for that. I wanted to get into the PICC being delayed for about 3 months. It's because of additional research associated with the fact that it's now been discovered that a closed loop is possible. So now they're working on it, and they're going to spend 3 months preparing that technology for sale, and they'll be selling it in the order in which they can develop model-specific versions of the PICC. So in the meantime, we're going to offer what we call the shortcut technology, and even more specifically called the hydro-assist fuel cell, and that is a preconditioner, ionizer, and vaporizer for your fuel. It also adds a device which produces a water gas. So we're using water to produce hydrogen, and we're adding that to richen the mixture. We have a preconditioner in there that affects the fuel in a manner that makes it much more burnable. It reduces the size of the molecules so that they break up easily and burn more easily. And there's a vaporizer, which does a similar process. And, of course, the ionizer, which is a magnetic device and aligns the molecules. So with all those four components of the hydroassist fuel cell, you can theoretically get from 50% to 100%, not just theoretically, it's been proven. That would, on your car, will vary, but we anticipate between 50% and 100% improvement, meaning almost double, or even possibly more than double, but all we're talking about right now is double as a maximum. So if you get that, you should be thrilled. you get 50%, you should still be thrilled. Well, many people will be, I think.
Okay, well, now I need clarification on this. So this HFAC, was that the acronym?
AFC, that's the Hydro Assist Fuel Cell. And we call it that because it is, in fact, has a fuel cell technology along with it. It takes water. There is a water bottle in it, involved with it, that we feed the water to a separator that operates very in a similar manner to what we used to call R-gas, still do, in fact.
Uh-huh.
R-gas is the stoichiometric mixture of hydrogen and oxygen, but once it's separated and mixed with the rest of the air, it just becomes hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
So we're adding hydrogen to the fuel to richen the mixture, and then we have to compensate for the computer, which would otherwise have kicked in. This was the thing we recently discovered, why it is that we're taking a little extra time. But the computer kicked in and would automatically force the fuel down the throat of the engine, no matter whether it needed it or not. So we had to disable that or circumvent that problem by adding an oscillator to the sensor, to the oxygen sensors.
Okay, so the HAFC unit also includes a computer modification to...
Well, the modification is minor in this case because we are using a computer on board. We're not changing it. We're not replacing it. That's why the pre-ignition catalytic converter is expected to cost in excess of $2,000, while the HAFC is going to be $900.
Okay. Yeah, what I needed to clarify here for listeners is, okay, you say you're generating hydrogen and then you're blending that in with the existing fuel. Well, now,
right.
Most people's minds would say, well, okay, then this is just another hydrogen boost system. But no, it has some extra features beyond simply throwing a few hydrogen atoms into the fuel blend.
Yeah, the key to the technology that makes it more efficient than others that may exist on the market, I'm not aware of any that are producing more than 50%.
Yeah.
Or even that much in the way of improvement. And the reason that is the organization of these devices, the order in which they're passed through and the particular sequence, not just the sequence, but the effect of them as a whole, collectively, those four devices.
Yeah, if I can draw a comparison here, I just poked around on the Internet last night, and if you go to Google Video and whatnot and type in hydrogen, you'll see various guys demonstrating their hydrogen boost systems. And the one company that seems to have the most impressive-looking hydrogen boost system is called Gorilla. So I went to their website and looked at the prices of their system. The prices and one other factor was the current consumption of their system. And a 20-cell unit had a current consumption. Now, admittedly, this is at startup, and to charge the contacts in their whole cell unit, but it had a 40-amp draw on startup. Well, the average four-cylinder family car is only going to have a 60-amp alternator on there, maybe an 80-amp if you ordered a heavy-duty system. And I think maybe if you've got a big honking Ram V8 pickup truck, you probably get a 120-amp alternator on that. I might be wrong, but those are the ranges we're talking about. Well, when I looked at Gorilla's equipment, shucks, that little 20-cell unit drew 40 amps at startup, and that's the biggest you would dare put on a small car. So you've got some high current consumption issues there, plus the price. I think that small unit was up close to a little over $2,000 to $3,000. So when you look at comparable systems out there, and it's a free world, everybody's got, well, to listen to this show, you got to be on the Internet, so you know how to shop. Feel free to go out and look at what else is there, but I think you may end up coming right back to look at this hydrogen assist fuel cell that Better World Technologies has, because it is it's a good price and it's got some unique properties itself to begin with, and then there's one other price incentive. You want to tell them what that is, Kurt?
Oh yes, when you're going to have to order or an estimate only for a pre-ignition catalytic converter in order to get a hydro assist fuel cell from us. But if you do, and you get your estimate ultimately, you'll be able to get a 75% credit in the trade-back form, in other words, by trading back in your hydroassist fuel cell for a pre-ignition catalytic converter. So all you'll be paying is the 25% of the cost for whatever duration of time you have it if you decide to trade up to the pre-ignition catalytic converter.
And that's something you cannot get from any other hydrogen boost system out there. I credit everybody who's done research on it. I'm not going to badmouth any of the hydrogen boost systems out there. They've all put a lot of work into to coming up with the products they've got. But as we look, what we see is now being offered here, and will be, and improvements that are available only a few months down the road. This is really jumping to the head of the line as far as doing hydrogen boost. I don't know if you could elaborate any further on tests that have been done on with this hydrogen assessed fuel cell, because again, I apologize for my misunderstanding. I originally thought it was just another hydrogen boost, which conventionally is about a 15% to 20% increase in mileage, which is nothing to sneeze at.
Right.
But if you say this is almost doubling your mileage, well, then that's amazing in itself.
Right, and the actual tests on a couple of 4-cylinder cars, they did an Alliance. Hyundai Alliance and a Toyota, and both of them were getting 2.5 times their mileage, but that, of course, is we're not guaranteeing that. We anticipate you'll get at least 50%.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, you can send it back. You get a 30-day trial, so if you don't like it, send it back, and we'll credit you back your entire refund your entire amount. So there's it's a win-win, especially if you ultimately end up trading it in on a pre-ignition catalytic converter.
Mm-hmm.
But going to close the loop and produce no exhaust at all.
Very good. Well, I just know that adding any amount of hydrogen to your blend is going to start knocking your hydrocarbon output down.
Right.
And so, and any hydrogen boost system that you put on is going to start some improvements. But right. This one seems to have had some extra thought put into it.
Yeah, and there is another little kicker in there. When you first install this, it may take a little while for it to improve your mileage because your engine may be gunked up, may have a lot of carbon in it.
Yeah.
And because of the preconditioner, we've discovered that the preconditioner cleans out your engine, and after it's all cleaned out, then it gets even better mileage than initially it may.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to try it a couple of weeks at least before you know what kind of mileage you'll get.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to draw this portion of the show to a close so I can get on to discussing that permanent magnet motor announcement that also came out. So, Kurt, I want to thank you so much for being on the show, and I want to remind listeners, go ahead and give me your website once again.
Sure, it's befreetech.com. That's befreetech.com.
Okay, and just go to the website and follow all the links, and you'll eventually eventually find information on just what we've been talking about here. Now, I've also inserted links for this product on my own website at commutefaster.com. So if you're if you can't remember any of the hosts' websites that they mentioned, just go back to commutefaster.com, click on my energy button, and right now I've got information about this over under my products available now. Right up at the top there, so you can that'll take you right over to Kurt's site and get information there. So once again, Kurt, thank you so much for being my guest here on the first half of the show, and bring us up to speed on an amazing product. And boy, we can just look forward to when all the Asian countries clean up their act on their little motor scooter issues.
Yes, sir, Ken. Thanks very much. I enjoyed being on your show.
Appreciate okay. It. Thanks. We'll be talking to you later then.
Right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Okay, and I guess I'm still on the air here. I'm still learning my control panel, so excuse the stuttering. The next guest that we'll be bringing on here in a few minutes, as soon as I see him show up on my control panel, is Sterling Allen, and he hosts the freeenergynews.com website. As I admitted on my first show, and I'll admit it again, I am somewhat biased as to what I take the time to report on my web page. My two favorites are hydrogen on demand, various applications of hydrogen, along with permanent magnet motors. So those are the main two items you'll see me highlighting in my technological advances. And yet I'm still open to things like here Dennis Lee up and comes up with something that does a great job of cleaning up the existing hydrocarbon burning engines that we already know about. So I'll give airtime to those topics too. But what will be coming up here in the next segment is a gentleman has been experimenting with a permanent magnet motor system here for some time, and we've seen small-scale model replicas in videos, again, just put in permanent magnet motor into Google Videos search engine, and you'll see short clips there. I might recommend a little segment of my energy page. Again, commutefaster.com, click on the purple button, and then drop down to the new announcements, news, and documentation. And over in the far right column, the green column, you'll see a phrase. Let me get it up on the screen here so I can recognize it. It says must-watch videos. If you click on that, that's a list of some of my favorite video clips. And you'll see one of the clips there is Sterling Allen demonstrating a scale model of the Perindev motor that was done at, I believe it was the 2005 Tesla Energy Conference in Salt Lake City, Utah. So I see it looks like Sterling's on the show here. Is that you, Sterling?
It is.
Okay, fantastic. Well, let me reintroduce you again. The name is Sterling Allen. His website is freeenergynews.com, and the easy way to find him is go to my energy page, and he's the top news site that I have listed in my cluster of all the other good alternative energy news sites. And as I was just saying before I brought you on the air, Sterling, I'd say my website is admittedly biased. I have two favorite energies, and that's about the only thing I report on, namely hydrogen on-demand related products or permanent magnets. But what I have to recommend listeners is Sterling Allen's site is the most thorough one on the Internet. He covers everything, whether it's wind, geothermal, plasma, you name it. His site is the be all and end all for referencing all the different alternative energies that are out there. So reason I'm bringing Sterling on today is he on his talk show down on the BBS network on Saturday, he interviewed Mike Brady from Perindev Motors, and Mike made a startling announcement which slaps in the face all the skepticism that's been out there of, well, it's just a toy. And shucks, one of the and Sterling, I'll let you comment on this skeptical remark that I've seen on chat boards. One said that a magnet is just like a spring; you compress it, and yeah, sure, there's plenty of energy in it, but eventually it's gonna uncompress just like a spring, and there won't be anything left. So there's plenty of skepticism out there as to whether a permanent magnet motor concept would work at all. But now I'm going to toss it over into your lap, Sterling. Let my listeners know what your listeners heard on Saturday.
Well, thanks, Ken. First of all, let me just correct something. I appreciate your sentiments regarding our news and directory service. Many do recognize it as being the best for cutting-edge energy technology development and advancements. I wouldn't call it the end-all, be-all. There are a lot of great news services out there, yours included, that we draw from to pick and choose the stories that we feature. And we try and focus on things that are really pushing the envelope, whether it's in solar or cold fusion or magnet motors in this case. I do have extensive experience with Mike Brady. Probably the best evidence for that is I own Perindev.com. If you type in Perindev.com, it goes to our coverage at PESWiki.com, which is an independent directory service where people can post skeptical or positive comments, replication attempts, successful or unsuccessful. There's one person who posts there that said that he successfully replicated the Brady magnet motor. We also have a statement there of a guy who was in Germany who saw the motor in operation for 20 minutes. He was not a scientist. He was a money person wanting to invest or something along those lines, but he saw it nonetheless. There have been witnesses, in-person witnesses to the technology in addition to the video. And let me just comment, if I could, about the magnet motor video. As you see this, what you see is this rotor with three parallel rotors on a shaft. And then you have a clamshell arrangement of three stator that close in. And as Mike closes in the stator arrangement, you see the rotors actually kind of rock back and forth, and then they start turning. And as he has it fully into place, the thing continues to accelerate. You can watch the light playing on the shaft, and you can tell that it is continuously changing speed and accelerating. And then at a point where he starts, he disengages the there's no load on the thing, so he can't just keep it going because it would speed to destruction. I think he said it went up to about 3,000 RPM. He then unscrews the stator mechanism, and you see walking into the room what I know to be the maid, because I was there at his house. I actually helped assemble that unit that you see in the video. It was not working at the time we were there. We couldn't get it the proper magnetic alignment while we were there at his home for a week in Johannesburg. But that was his maid walking into the room. I think for the sake of a good video, she was kind of like a kid walking in the room in the middle of a radio show and says, "Hi, Daddy." You know, it's kind of like, "Oh, no." So, you know, he picks up the camera, changes the angle, says, "Okay, let's do a walk around." So I don't think you can accuse him of saying, "Well, why didn't you do the walk around during the acceleration?" I think he just didn't think of doing the walk around at all until the maid walked in, and then, "Oh, yeah, maybe we should change the angle of the camera here."
Yeah.
And then as the motor comes to a stop, it performs in inverse of what you see when it started. It doesn't just gradually go to zero as you would see like if a bicycle tire was coming to a stop. It actually rocks back and forth as it gets to the end of its movement, just as it did when the stators were coming back into position. To me, that tells me that he doesn't have a cheater device on there that's making the thing spin, because it wouldn't rock back and forth if you had a drill on the other end making it turn, for example. And so I do not buy into the skeptical argument that he's got some kind of cheater device on there. I just know him. I've seen the device. And I have been in association with quite a few people who, and let me just put a number on it. It's somewhere in the region of 10. Who claim to have seen or have built a working magnet motor. So even though I have not personally laid my eyes on one, I don't believe all these people are lying to me. And so I do believe that the concept can work. There's certainly a lot of people chasing it. You know, there's some kind of inherent drive, if you want to call it that. People sense that there's somehow a way to harness those magnet energy, and not as a battery. You know, you put in so much energy to make the magnet in the first place, and then you're just basically gradually draining that out of the magnet and degaussing the magnet. I don't believe that that's what's going on. I do think that that could happen if your magnet motor arrangement stresses the magnets and is redlining your magnets. They are going to lose their strength, because you know, if you are making the, you're really pounding the magnets by bringing them into very close approximation and then out of approximation, that's going to be redlining your magnets, so to speak, a term I use to for the idea of stressing the magnet, and that will cause them to degauss. And that is a scientific fact, that magnets under stress don't, permanent magnets under stress don't hold a charge. But if you engineer your design right, you're not depleting the magnets any more than a magnet would be depleted in a regular motor, where you have permanent magnets and you have an electromagnetic component that, as you fire, turn on and off the electromagnet component, it then causes rotation in your motor. Well, this is the same concept, except that this thing is self-energizing. I'm getting ahead of myself here. So that addresses the question about, are we degaussing? And we actually have a link on our coverage about Parendive Motor that somebody claims to have built one and actually experienced that he saw a degaussing of the magnets. Whether or not that actually happened is, you know, has not been verified. And Mike Brady responded to that and said, "Well, that's not what's happening in our case. We've tested the magnets. They're not degaussing." Go ahead.
Yeah, there's one video clarification I need to ask you, and you're the perfect person to ask, because you were the one in the video. The demonstration video that you're referencing is the one that I believe was originally posted from the Parendive Motor website, and that was the clamshell approach, where the outer row, the outer circle of magnets are brought in gradually in a clamshell fashion. But I remember seeing a video that was shot, I believe it was at the 2005 or maybe the 2004 Tesla conference there in Salt Lake, and you demonstrated a small working model that had the center circle of magnets was slid in and out on a shaft.
That was not a working device. The rotation was caused by my turning the shaft by hand.
We were never
able to get that thing to function so that the magnets were propelling the thing. There was a couple of times when I was playing with different configurations there on my kitchen table that as I started the thing spinning, just for 4 or 5 seconds, it's like, did I see that thing start accelerating?
Uh-huh.
And then it started slowing down again, and boy, that had me going, but I just couldn't replicate it.
Okay.
We were never able to get our magnets in a configuration that it caused acceleration on that.
So chances are then that Mike chose the clamshell approach for his final working model then?
It could be. I'm guessing, though, that that we didn't have the magnets in the proper configuration. You have to have them in the right arrangement. And you don't have every position full. Basically, you have an infinite number, almost a combination. By the time you have, you know, some 30 slots on each rotor and stator to play with, and all the different combinations of what slots are filled and which slots are not, good luck trying to get it to work if you don't have the inventor intuition that Mike Brady has to make it work in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And we just were not able to do it. And at the time, Mike was willing to help us get it to work. The catch we had was that the person who had engineered that design of bringing the stator in from the side across shafts, and it was very nicely engineered, he wanted to try to maybe go for a patent on that. And there was enough lack of trust at the time between our party and Mike Brady that he didn't want to disclose that. And so when Mike said, well, let me see what you've got, and I'll see if I can help you, the pictures were never conveyed at that time. And so the opportunity was lost at that time, unfortunately. So there's a little inside political element of what happened at that time. But, no, the motor doesn't work. And if somebody wants to, you know, come over here to Utah and play around with this thing under my supervision, I would be glad to let him give it a shot.
The in and out shaft mock-up model, you have that there in Utah?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Now, one thing that was really exciting about the interview that he sprung on me that I'd never heard before from him or any whisperings, and that is now that he's got we've not talked about this yet in this interview today, but he's then taken that magnet motor arrangement, and I remember one time about 2 years in a conversation with him, he was saying, you know, I think there's a way to replace one of the sets, the stator, for example, with an electromagnetic configuration to accentuate the effect that we're seeing with just magnets. And what he has done is he has been able to make one portion of the magnet motor into an electromagnetic arrangement. And once you get it spinning past, I think he said 200 RPMs, he spins his optimally at 3,000 RPMs. But once it goes past 200 RPMs with a starter motor, the thing then starts self-actuating and is able to self-run. And then as you have it running at 3,000 RPMs, it's got oodles of power left over to then turn a shaft, which you can connect to an alternator / generator, which then generates electricity. And you can then regulate the torque, and there's ways to govern both the input and the load end so that you can basically respond to whatever power need that you have, whether it's, he said, as low as 15 volts or watts, which doesn't make a lot of sense when your thing is rated for 100 kilowatts.
Yeah.
But the idea is that you can basically put out just about any range of electricity with this thing, though it is optimally driving at about a 300 kilowatt unit, for example, would be optimal at 280 kilowatts. You don't want to go it all the way to the top where it starts heating up a little bit. And that's the exciting thing is, you know, he says that he's you know, he's had on his website that he's got these 100 and 300 kilowatt motors, but he has not publicly disclosed until our interview yesterday that he has around, I think he said 80 or 90 motors that have been built at the rate of about 20 or 30 a month since July of these 100 or 300 kilowatt versions, and that he's had six of these earlier beta units on six home/farm situations that have been running continuously for 14 months with, he said, virtually no problems. He mentioned that there would, on one of them, they'd had a little issue with a bearing, and that was the extent of the mechanical issues of these motors. And so now they're in production. They are selling these things. They've got, he said, what was it, 65,000 orders for this thing. I doubt all of those people have paid the deposit. I didn't ask him the question in the interview because that's a lot of money. To purchase one of these things, it's required 50% down.
Yeah, I think that was 6,500, but either way,
that's
a lot of...
I said 6,500 in my write-up, but sent me an email and said, no, the recording said 65,000.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm not surprised, but... two numbers stuck in my mind. You asked him the question of how many people have actually seen your final working product. Didn't he say somewhere around 120?
Yeah.
Okay, but then he's got, it was about 60 that are already installed then, right?
Yeah, of the 80 or 90 that they've built, he guessed that somewhere around 60, 62 of them are presently installed and operating.
Okay, and then he's got either 6,500 or 65,000. Somebody correct the decimal point there.
65,000 is what he said on the recording.
Worth of orders. Well, that's pretty much an indication that of 120 people looking at it, half of them bought and the other half placed orders, and apparently nobody has walked away and said, oh, it doesn't work. Would that be a correct generalization?
You also have to factor in the people who are going in to talk licenses who don't have a unit yet, in that 120 who have seen it, and we're actually in negotiations with him right now to see if we can secure some North American license, and just today we're on the phone with him, and looks like we may be going in there and seeing the unit for ourselves. So things are moving ahead, hopefully. He has to check his schedule, but... He'll only entertain serious, you know, people who want to just come in and take a look at it. He's not going to give them the time of day.
Yeah.
There's a million of those who would just love to take up a peek. For that reason, he does not keep a prototype on hand for demonstration. He actually times it so that when the next unit is built, that's when, you know, somebody who's in licensing or whatever is able to see it.
That's quite understandable. I mean, in that private conference we had about it yesterday, one person made the comment that he wouldn't buy a new car without a test drive, and all I can come back with is show me one Ferrari or Lamborghini dealer in the world that will let a teenager walk in off the street and take a test drive. Everybody on high-end products has to be pre-qualified. I mean, realtors will not... Take a realtor in Beverly Hills with a $20 million mansion. Are they going to let any looky-loo walk through that thing? Absolutely not. They pre-qualify everybody before you can even look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And something as valuable as what Mike has here, I can fully understand his pre-qualifying anybody before he has to strike up the band and do his dog and pony show.
Another thing that came out in the interview that I thought was very enlightening and actually helped me overcome some of the skeptical hurdles in my mind was his comment to the effect that the skepticism that exists out there actually is serving him very well, because the fewer people that believe that this thing will work, the better time he has of it, because he is not inundated with all these orders and requests. He can grow in a manageable way. You know, we, the New Energy Congress, of which you are a part as well, have been wanting to go in and validate his technology since July of last year when he went into production. And he's promises, yeah, you know, sure, we'll let you come on in. And we try and make appointments with him. He doesn't give us a date, keeps putting us off. And I just scratch in my head saying, why don't you want to validate? And that makes sense, that if he were to go on national television and say, hey, look what I got, now you've got a million people that want one of these things right now, and he's only producing 20 to 30 a month. He's got to get the licensees signed up. He's got to get them in production, and that takes time. And so I think it actually I'm much easier on him on my skeptical meter because of that factor. It makes sense as to why he's not trying to be credible. The lack of credibility on his part, you know, he doesn't have affidavits. He doesn't have, you know, witness. He doesn't even have a picture of the thing. I think the pictures that he has on there are of other generators of a comparable appearance to what he has.
Right. It does look like a stock photo.
Yeah. And so, you know, he's not trying to be credible because the incredibility is helping him be able to grow at a manageable level.
Do you offhand remember what size units he's already installed? What was the kW output? What was the smallest one?
100 kilowatts, I believe, is what those six that are installed on the smaller levels.
Okay, so he's got up to 100 kilowatt units already in use then.
Yeah, those none of them are smaller than 100 kilowatts. Not that they can't produce at a lower level, but they're rated at 100 kilowatts. And so a home that is typically going to be using between 1 and 5 kilowatts, you know, 100 kilowatts is way overkill. Some of that could be sent back to the grid with net metering.
Yeah.
But most home lines are not going to be able to handle the amount of electricity that that thing would be cranking out.
Uh-huh.
And so they would have to ramp it down and be running below what it's rated for, unless you're on a farm. And he did mention that one of them was on a farm where you have much more of a load and requirement.
And so the likelihood of availability in the United States is... Well, he's got to get his licensing for manufacturing and retail sales done before we'll ever see a unit here in the U.S. Is that correct, then?
He did tell us that there are 3 units headed for Canada next month or so.
I see. Okay.
So there's nothing in the U.S. yet.
Yeah. Well, it's not just small inventors that wave a carrot in front of people, and yet you can't buy it yet. I had a personal experience with General Electric. I'll have to elaborate on a future show. It's a little time-consuming. But even the big guys like to issue press releases way before something's really available on the street. So, Sterling, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come in and tell us about this startling announcement that happened on your show. Why don't you give the listeners what your website address is again?
Yeah, freeenergynews.com is one of 4. It's easiest to remember.
Okay.
We're at the top of that.
Okay. Well, we're getting pushed to the end of the hour here. So thanks, Sterling, for being on. And if anybody wants to find the websites of either of my guests, just check my show notes, and they'll be posted within a couple of hours after the end of the show, as well as this program is archived, too. And what was that, Sterling?
Sounds good. We'll catch you later.
Okay, thanks again. Bye. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to the Commute Faster Energy Hour. And Lord willing, tomorrow's guest should be James Roby again from the Waterfuel Museum, and I'll give him a fair shake to make up for all the technical problems we had on his first show. So thanks for tuning in, and send your friends to this site. The show is available in the archives. Thanks again.